In the global campaign will in clean up so that it can be as it was three generations of Speech Radio News.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Robin Ryan, Peter Schoaf, Joseph Cunningham, Kristen Yount, and Carl Vischer. The producer is Zeke Harrington. Special thanks to the reporters at Free Speech Radio News. If you'd like to hear more of their stories, go to fsrn.org. Our engineer tonight is... A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K2H2BH FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Ren Green.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott host the second in a series of programs on the new health insurance exchanges, including Cover Oregon. Guests include Amy Favre of Cover Oregon and Jim Hauser, co-owner of Hawthorne Auto Clinic and member of the Main Street Alliance of Oregon. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour, a program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Locust Focus, a weekly interview show about our place on the planet with Barbara Bernstein. At 11, Grace Eagle Reed hosts Disability Awareness. Her guest is David Dickinson, Regional Administrator of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. They'll talk about addiction in the context of Recovery Month. And at 11:30 on the Radio Zine, we'll hear about the Debt to Space program, an art project by Cassie Thornton and the Feminist Economics Department. It uses radio waves to export the behavioral, psychological, and emotional ramifications of all types of financial hardship, from the fiscal landscape of Earth to outer space. Thank you very much, KBOO members, for your generous support. Our website is back up, so if you're not a member, you can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Now stay tuned for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. Have a great weekend and keep breathing.
Good night, Liam.
Good night, Ren.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Janine Jackson, here with Peter Hart. This week on Counterspin, media tell us this week marks the fifth anniversary of the financial crisis, since it was September 2008 that global financial services firm Lehman Brothers declared bankruptcy. Meanwhile, 6 in 10 people tell pollsters they don't think the country could avoid another collapse, which the Washington Post write-up called a pessimistic outlook. But are people pessimistic or realistic? We'll hear from financial blogger Mike Konzel of the Roosevelt Institute about that. Also on Counterspin today, a new study of the controversial gas drilling tactic known as fracking seems to be good news for the industry. Maybe no surprise, since they funded it. But are the findings about methane leaks as good as the press reports make them sound? We'll put that question to Hugh McMillan of the group Food and Water Watch. All that's coming up, but first, as usual, we'll take a look back at the week's press.
The House Republican plan to cut $40 billion from the SNAP food stamp program over the next 10 years has been getting a lot of media attention, but sometimes reporters let balance get in the way of the facts. In USA Today on September 18th, readers were told that the costs of the program have exploded. Why? Well, here's the paper's explanation. Quote, Democrats say the program has grown because the economy tanked. The expansion is attributed to states giving benefits to people who do not qualify. Close quote. Well, we know there was a massive economic collapse and a painfully inadequate recovery, so that's reality. But Republicans say the program is full of fraud. Is that true? No one could know from this USA Today account. A politician who agrees with the cuts says so, and one who opposes them says that's a lie. Who's right? Well, we know that there's evidence that, according to the Inspector General of the Agriculture Department, there's basically no serious overpayment fraud. And the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities reports that SNAP, quote, has one of the most rigorous payment error measurement systems of any public benefit program, close quote. The group also points out that historically, and rather predictably, food stamp programs swell in times of economic distress. So why can't USA Today report these facts? Perhaps because it would seem like they would be taking a side. They'd prefer to take no position. That's why the subhead of the piece says that these cuts could cut waste or hurt poor, depending on viewpoint. That's perfectly balanced journalism and horribly misleading.
After NPR CEO Gary Nell stepped down abruptly, the public radio giant named a new acting boss, who happens to be a major Republican donor with ties to two prominent conservative think tanks. Paul Haga was already a member of the NPR board. His career path included some time spent as chair of the Investment Company Institute, which is the lobbying arm of the mutual fund industry. And he's affiliated with the American Enterprise Institute and Hoover Institution. Haga made a $32,000 donation to the Republican National Committee this year. In recent years, he's donated to Republican politicians like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. Now, according to right-wing mythology, NPR is a decidedly left-wing media outlet, living off government subsidies whilst pushing its liberal agenda. You can tell that's not true if you listen to the network or if you consider the sort of folks they choose to put in charge.
CNN brought back the old left-right debate show Crossfire a few weeks ago. But there's one big question. Is Stephanie Cutter, one of the left hosts, there to represent the left or the White House? Cutter has a day job heading up a PR firm called Precision Strategies, meaning that she has other clients that CNN viewers don't know about. And early this month, a Fox News report said Cutter was part of a White House strategy session on selling the Obama administration's Syria policy. So that could mean Cutter takes part in meetings to craft the White House message and then goes on TV to talk about that White House message. Turns out it's not just about Syria. She was also, according to the New York Times, brought in to talk up Larry Summers to the media before he bowed out of the race to become the next chair of the Federal Reserve. Now, Cutter doesn't deny any of this. As she told Politico, no one's ever accused me of not saying exactly what I think. Well, that isn't the point. If Cutter is huddling with the White House and then going on TV to grade the White House's performance, that's a problem. Maybe not for her, but it should be for the news outlet that employs her, which is supposed to care about these conflicts of interest.
We mentioned last week that some lawmakers are on a listening tour, getting an earful from corporate CEOs about how they pay too much in taxes. You could read a September 16th USA Today story as part of that PR campaign. Headlined, "Biggest Beneficiary of Tax Breaks? You." The piece tells readers that the country's $1.2 trillion in tax expenditures are, quote, not all corporate tax giveaways and special interest handouts. More than 90% of federal tax breaks go to individual taxpayers, close quote. When the story explains, quote, non-taxable Social Security benefits will save retired and disabled people $32.9 billion, up 59% since 2009. Employees will save $212.8 billion because their employer-provided health benefits aren't taxed, a 47% increase from 2009, close quote. But wait a minute. Social Security is a program that puts some of your income, which you've already paid taxes on, into a fund that you can draw on if you live to retirement. It's unclear how allowing this return of some of your own money qualifies as a giveaway. And the fact that your boss doesn't pay taxes on the cost of your health care premiums, which has increased dramatically in recent years, probably doesn't feel like much of a perk. It's worth noting that in most industrialized countries, health insurance is considered a government obligation to the population in general, not a special benefit to particular individuals. The piece does include a comment from someone from Citizens for Tax Justice who suggests the focus is on the wrong tax breaks. Quote, if you have a spending program and 68% of that money goes to the richest 1%, most people would think that's pretty bad, close quote. That's actually a major point of the research USA Today is reporting. Yes, tax expenditures are broadly felt, but the benefits tend to disproportionately flow upwards. The study underscored that, quote, 10 major tax breaks that together total more than $750 billion in tax savings in 2013 are tilted heavily in favor of the top income earners. 17% of the benefits from these major tax breaks go to the top 1% of households, close quote. That's a very different message than saying little guys are gobbling up more of the goodies than corporations.
And finally, the Census Bureau announced that median household income fell for the fifth straight year to its lowest inflation-adjusted level since 1995, as many Americans continue to suffer from home foreclosures and crushing debts. Incomes for top earners, however, have continued to soar, making for a country of record-high inequality. The Wall Street Journal seems to be on the story, after a fashion. The Murdoch-owned paper recently announced a job opening for a reporter for their mansions section. The successful candidate, the Journal says, will break news and write ambitious stories on, well, mansions. If you think that's a window on a very small world, think again. The Journal says Mansions features touch on, quote, a wide range of topics. Past covers have included a profile of a billionaire from Kentucky who owns more than 1 million acres of land, an analysis of the market for the homes of college football coaches, and an exclusive look at Larry Ellison's plans for the island of Lanai, close quote. Ellison is the fifth richest man in the world. Now, some might call it gross materialism, but News Corp CEO Robert Thompson suggests a Democratic take, since, quote, we all like to think of our home as a mansion, even if it is a humble abode, close quote. Oddly, humble abode was apparently rejected as the section's title.
Thank you, Peter. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. Barack Obama hosted an event September 16th, marking what ABC, along with numerous outlets, called the five-year anniversary of the financial crisis. 5 years ago this week, Christiane Amanpour told CNN viewers, the collapse of Lehman Brothers kicked off the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. It was a terrifying moment when no one knew if the whole global economy would implode. While the focus of most such reports was Obama's contention that we have cleared away the rubble from the financial crisis and begun to lay a new foundation for economic growth and prosperity. Though, to Amanpour's credit, she followed up with an interview with former FDIC chair Sheila Bair, who indicated there was still a fair amount of rubble left to clear. Our next guest says the tendency to frame the financial crisis as something that started in September 2008 is misleading, and misleading in a way that could impact what we do going forward. Mike Konzel is a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. He blogs at Next New Deal. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to Counterspin, Mike Konzel.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, obviously it's a kind of shorthand, but what is so troubling about marking the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy as the start of the crisis, this one terrifying moment? And what more broadly do you think is being missed or misunderstood in the prevailing conversation about the crisis?
Absolutely. The failure of Lehman Brothers and the subsequent failure of AIG was very traumatic for the economy. You can see in all kinds of different indicators, it was a very traumatic time for just the financial industry as a whole as well. But if you look back at the crisis, it actually starts earlier in 2007. This is actually not that controversial among financial economists. The panic that actually started to generate the problems between banks lending and in the capital markets were basically derived from the fact that subprime mortgages were starting to default in massive numbers. It made people very nervous about the mortgage-backed securities that were going on at that time. So when we look at 2008, we look at Lehman Brothers, we look at AIG, there are ways we can combat those problems. We can make banks hold more capital. We can have special legal regimes that fight too big to fail. We can do things to derivatives to make them better collateralized, make them less likely to have these AIG structures where they take huge bets, and if they don't pay out, they just disappear. But that won't actually deal with housing, and it won't actually deal with the bad faith that Wall Street, I think, generated among a lot of people when it came to both how it sold mortgages